WSB's Money Matters with Wes Moss. Certified financial planner and chief investment strategist from Atlanta's Capital Investment Advisors. Wes talks to you about investing and saving for the future. Brought to you every Sunday by RBM of Atlanta Mercedes-Benz, Sandy Springs.
Good morning. Welcome to Money Matters here on a Sunday morning. Where do we begin after a week? We saw 2 days, stock market down over 800 points and over 500 points. That's 1,300 plus points negative just in two trading days. Yes, we bounced back a little bit on Friday, but it's a week that will wake you up and remind you just how treacherous markets can be and how quickly they can turn on you. Where do we go from here is the question. So market volatility, really, this whole year it was a little bit of a grind higher. Markets never really ran away. We had a big correction in February, down over 10%, and that happened very, very quickly. Then we kind of just slowly fought our way back without a whole lot of volatility for the remainder or the rest of 2018. And then here we are in a week where, yes, we know interest rates are going up. That's no secret. We've been talking about that for years, quite frankly. Yes, we know about tariffs with China. We've been talking about that all year. But all of a sudden, markets woke up and just fell out of bed, down 1,300 points, boom, in 24 hours. So really, really kind of waking investors up. And I know people get nervous during these periods of time. And you're an experienced investor, or else you wouldn't be listening to WSB Radio Sunday morning Money Matters, or you wouldn't be listening to the podcast. You probably have been through this many times before. You remember how it feels. You know that you should stay put. You know that you should take a long view. You know you should press on regardless. But you're also human, and you've got the emotion of, wait a minute, what is going on here? Why would markets, why would they get hit so aggressively, so quickly? Is there something else wrong? And we want to go through kind of the fundamentals. Where do we stand after a week like we just saw? We finished down for the Dow Jones, down over 4% for the week, which wiped out a lot of the gains for the year. The Dow is now only up 2%, 2.5%. For the year, the S&P 500 down over 4% just for the week, now only up 3.5%. So this is the kind of volatility that makes you wonder, wow, am I safe being an investor? Should I stay with stocks? What should I do? That's what we're going to talk about today. Underlying fundamentals, really what's underneath this market? Is the foundation crumbling, or are we going to be okay? I want to go through that here today. The number in the studio, we've got an hour here on Money Matters, and I'd love to take your phone calls on a Sunday morning. The number in the studio, I'm here with Ryan Ealy, as we are every Sunday morning, to take your calls and your questions. And we want to be able to talk directly with you. So if you have a question that may be more planning oriented or market oriented or product, hey, I've got this mutual fund and it doesn't seem to be doing well, should I get rid of it? And if I get rid of it, what else do I buy? What are some of the other things I should consider? I'm thinking about doing an annuity. I'm thinking about getting out of mutual funds. I'm thinking about buying individual stocks or ETFs. There's a lot of ways to go. And we're happy just to give you some objective third-party direction here on a Sunday morning. It's exactly why we come in here. That's exactly why we get up on Sunday mornings, and we love to do. So give us a call here in the studio. Just open up the phone lines. If you're headed to church or work, or I know it's Sunday, but we're a 24/7 economy. Church or work, or on this beautiful fall day, maybe headed to the golf course, or just taking a walk somewhere in the great state of Georgia, or around the country in Texas or California, North Carolina, give us a call here in the studio. The number is 404-872-0750. Again, you're thinking about, hey, let's ask Money Matters. Let's call Wes and Ryan and see what we can do. And we're happy to talk an issue through with you here on a Sunday morning. Again, the number 404-872-0750 here in the studio, or outside of Georgia, 1-800-WSB-TALK. Again, 1-800-WSB-TALK. Good morning. So again, we all know if you were alive this week, you know that it's a really rough week in markets. The other thing here, now that the Dow stands in the 25,000 range. So today we're at 25,339 is where we closed recently. But when you have a Dow Jones that's numerically that large and relative to, oh, remember when we were doing Money Matters in 2009 when the Dow was in the 6,000 range, a 5% drop on 25,000 is a very big number. Again, 1% is 250 points. So you get a day, any sort of numerical on a percentage basis, you get these really large numbers. And I think part of the fear that creeps into markets is that, hey, we were down 3.5% in a day. Well, that's 800 some points. So it really, really kind of catches our attention. So we live in this world where it's just hard to ignore this, and you're going to see it everywhere. But we also know we go through these corrections. We go through pullbacks. You have a 5% correction in a matter of a couple of days. It is kind of nerve-wracking. If we had a 5% correction, and I sent out a note to clients this week, actually an audio note very quickly, because I wanted to give folks our thoughts on kind of what's happening in the world that we live in, what's happening from an investment standpoint. It's really the speed that is concerning, I think. When you get a 2 days and you drop that quickly, it's the speed that makes people nervous. If we dropped 5% over the course of 5 months, we kind of steadily lost 1% a month, really nobody would care. You wouldn't be worried. You wouldn't be nervous. Maybe a little frustrated that, hey, we haven't really gone anywhere for 5 or 6 months. Here it happens in 2 days. That's what makes investing so nerve-wracking. Couple of points that I want to talk about here today and just share some thoughts about where we think we stand. Number one, despite how terrible this week was, stocks are still positive on the year, albeit very slightly, they're still positive. Historically, it's very normal to have kind of go nowhere, which is kind of where we are, close to nowhere on the year, in a midterm election cycle. We know that historically, 2 years after the presidential election, we get into the midterms, we have a kind of markets don't do a lot until the elections are over. And we still have several weeks before that happens. So we've got to get to November 6th in order, early November, get the elections out of the way. And then typically that's when markets kind of do the best, the final couple months of the year. So that's number one, is that A, we're still positive. B, we didn't expect to have that great of a year because it is a midterm election year. Number two, the economy continues to hit on all cylinders, which is really, even though the economy continues to do well, it's also one of the main catalysts for this market correction. Kind of ironically, the economic strength we're seeing is the very thing that's prodding the Federal Reserve to hike interest rates and hike rates higher and higher and higher. It was only December of 2015, not that long ago, when the Fed funds rate was still 0.00 because the economy still hadn't kind of got it. The economy is still stuck in the mud at that point. Since then, the Fed has not only pushed rates higher, but they've also increased the pace of rate hikes in 2018. The bond market, by the way, so it's not just the Fed, the bond market itself, this massive $30, $40 trillion market also has a say-so in interest rates. And the bond market has pushed rates higher alongside the Fed. The 10-year Treasury started this year at about 2.4%. We ratcheted to 3.25% this past week. We finished a little bit lower than 3.25%, but that's a big move and it's a quick move. We finished on Friday 3.14% down from where we were earlier in the week. So we get this good news is bad news scenario. To some extent, the sell-off in part due to the strong economic backdrop. But that backdrop has added fuel to the interest rates, going higher and higher and higher. In the grand scheme of things, even though it feels as though interest rates have moved a bunch, a 3.15% Treasury rate is a lot closer to being normal. So rather than saying interest rates are getting aggressive and high, they're really just getting back to normal. If the normal range is 4 to 4.5% for the 10-year for the last couple of decades. So where we are today is a lot closer to normal than back when rates were at 1.5% or 1.5% for so long. So this process of normalization is a net positive from a big picture perspective. And it's to be expected that while we readjust interest rates higher, we're going to have some bumps in the road, exactly what we saw this week. Four in this list. Tariffs are still a big concern. But I'm a big believer that we have kind of avoided a full-blown global trade war. I think that's off the table. We've talked about tariffs all year. We looked over the past year really at, I look at this as four separate battles. The United States versus Canada, the U.S. versus Mexico, the U.S. versus the EU, and the U.S. versus China. All four are important battles for the U.S. But the risk of a global trade war on all these separate economic fronts, yeah, that's a big deal. That would be economically devastating. But we just got an announcement not long ago, still doesn't get a lot of press, about the USMCA, which is the new NAFTA, the United States-Mexico-Canada Agreement, which solves two of those battles. So let's check off the list of problems, Canada. Let's check off the list of Mexico. The third battle, the U.S. versus the EU, that has quieted down significantly. And both parties have agreed to play ball and they are moving towards what they call, this is the U.S. and the European Union, a zero tariff environment. That just leaves China. So our trade relationship with China arguably has gotten worse over the last several months, and it might take years to solve. But the positive impact of solving really most of our trade disputes, call it three out of four, and if you look at the dollars involved, it's about three quarters of our trade relations is solved because now swords are put away with the EU, Mexico and Canada solved. We've got about a quarter of that group, which is now still China. That's the one trade, that's the one tariff battle or trade battle that we're going to continue to be stuck in for a long time. We can handle one. We just couldn't handle four. So the good news here is that as much as you hear about trade, I think we're in a decent place and we're not in a place where this one particular disagreement with China can bring down our economy. It's not powerful enough to do that despite the headlines. All right, we got to run here and then we're going to go to the phones when we come back. The number again, 404-872-0750. You're listening to Money Matters. More Money Matters straight ahead.
SB in the WSB radio app. Then Monday in Atlanta's morning news, we'll be there when early voting begins and a beautiful start to Kirk Mellish's 5-day forecast.
Well, good morning. Welcome back to Money Matters. We'll go right to the phones. Pam joins us in Williamson. Pam, good morning. What's going on? How can I help? Can you hear me, Pam?
Hello?
Whoa, there we go. There we go, Pam. Yes, you're on. This is Wes. You're on Money Matters. How's it going?
Hey, Wes, thank you.
Hey, what's going on?
I invited my stockbroker to sell last week when the market dropped 5% because I was thinking, I'm going to retire in 5 years. If I was much younger, I wouldn't have cared because I thought it would correct itself shortly. Now I'm wondering, when do I get back in the market? Here I sit with this sum of money that I don't want to just sit, but I don't know when to get back in the market. Coming soon will be the analyst call, and we never do well in the transportation world. Regardless of our earnings, our stock always drops. So well, now I'm sitting, I'm scared. What do I do?
Yeah, no, it's one of those weeks that kind of smacks everybody, almost kind of smacks you upside the head and makes you nervous about investing in general. Are you, when you say you're about to retire, like what, where are you in that stage? Are you a year away or where are you in the phase of retirement?
5 years.
So you're 5 years before you even retire, right?
Yes.
Okay. So just, this is just a friendly reminder on this. And I think it helps to talk this through is that it, when you've got 5 years until you retire, and then when you're in retirement, let's call that another 20, right?
So, exactly.
So technically, you've got 25 years. And this is a tough thing, I think, when you're headed to retirement. You really think that you've got your time horizon gets way shorter, but it doesn't necessarily. I think psychologically it feels like, oh, now I can't lose today because I'm here. I've arrived near retirement. But really, you've got to say, well, you know, look, I've got 20 years. I've got 25 years. So you still have a long way to go, which still allows you to recover from these inevitable dips that we go through. Now, they're scary and they're unsettling, but a couple of things. I mean, we have the choice to kind of be in and out of the market, and let's say right now you're out, but let's say you get back in, and maybe the timing isn't perfect, and maybe it's kind of bad. And then the second option is to be in and out, and in and out, and in and out, and back and forth, and back and forth, and that's guaranteed to be bad, right? We know that that doesn't work. So really, you've got to kind of go with, we'll call it the lesser of these two evils, and then find your comfort allocation. You got to find, what is Pam, what are you comfortable with? And if that is a allocation, whether you have $500,000 or $2 million or whatever the number is, if half of that is in stocks and the other half is in, let's say, really safe treasuries, you've got to be able to be okay or comfortable with that, and then you got to live with it. So I'm here just to remind you that, you know, just because you're retiring tomorrow doesn't mean you're dying tomorrow. You have a whole giant phase of life left, which gives you time to ride through these bumps. And I'm here on a Sunday morning just to try to remind you that. Listen, I know it's tough. You've got to find your comfort allocation and live with it, Pam. We're going to talk more about this when we get back, but thank you for your call. Happy to help here on a Sunday morning. More Money Matters straight ahead. Good morning. Welcome to Money Matters here on a Sunday morning. The number in the studio, 404-872-0750. Hey, Wes, how can you be so sure the economy is in good shape? Doesn't this stock market drop tell us something is wrong? I want to answer this in two ways. Number one, I want to talk about market history. And number two, where we are in this economic cycle. Before we took a call, before we talked with Pam, I said, look, we have solved a big chunk of the trade disputes. Three out of the four battles we've been kind of engaging in, we've come to an agreement. Canada, Mexico, EU, still haven't come to an agreement with China. That may take a long time. And I don't think that in itself has a material impact on earnings. Remember, earnings in the U.S. have remained really strong, and they're the main driver behind higher stock prices over the last couple of years. We're about to start, well, we just started this past week, third quarter earnings season. All indications point towards a very strong earnings season, probably something like on the order of 20% higher from where we were last year. Until Chinese tariffs start to take a material bite out of that number, markets are going to very likely respond to these positive earnings we're just starting to see for the third quarter. So that's why this sell-off, though unsettling, doesn't make me that nervous. There's no one issue that caused the sell-off. You can call it rising interest rates, continued tariff war with China, trade war with China, midterm election cycle. But at some point, the U.S. economy, right now, the U.S. economy is very strong. There's really no recession on the horizon. And when I say horizon, I mean not just the next 3 to 6 months, arguably into 2020. That'll change, and we'll go back into recession. At some point, markets will drop. But in the interim, we're not there yet economically. Things are still too good to fall off a cliff anytime soon. So these corrections, likely the one we just saw this week, even though they're unsettling, in my opinion, they remain what I would call buyable pullbacks. They're never fun, but these are the exact events that make everyone so nervous. And this is what makes investing difficult. You know, it's not for the faint of heart. But I take solace in having a very diversified portfolio, a variety of different asset classes, and within those asset classes, high quality securities, and on the stock side, high quality securities on the bond side. And to me, that gives me peace of mind during these periods of temporary, and I'll stress that word, temporary pain, not permanent pain. Pam called from Williamson and said, look, Wes, I sold out of all my stocks this week. When do I get back in? Listen, that's a hard note. The answer is I don't know exactly when. We could have this correction that we're in right now could end up being a 10% or a 15%, right? I still don't think so, because I think earnings are starting to come in, are solid, that the market kind of wakes up and says, oh, okay, well, company's really making money again. We're not going to continue to drop. Stocks don't continue to drop when earnings do really well, typically. And again, we're getting to the midterm election cycle, so that's typically good for stocks, getting the midterm elections out of the way. So the next couple of months, really November, December, typically really good for markets. And what I said to Pam was, look, I know that it might be not the perfect time to get back in, but I can tell you what I can almost guarantee is not good, and that's hopping in and out and in and out and in and out and back and forth and trying to time this market, because that's almost a surefire way to not make money over time. And just because you're headed into retirement in the next couple of years doesn't mean your time horizon's really, it's not a three-year horizon. You still have 20 years, you still have 25 years. I just want to remind all of us that we've got a long time. We've got to think about this in terms of years, not days and weeks. As a reminder, find a comfortable allocation. Again, talking to Pam, should have probably held Pam over and talked more, but find a comfortable allocation that you could live with. You know, this is, okay, I can live with 50% in equities, and I'm okay if the stocks do really well, and I kind of could have done better if I had 90% in stocks. You got to be able to live with that side of it. You've also got to be able to live with the side that if things don't go well, that your 50% in equities is down 10%. Knowing that the other 50% of the portfolio is something that's remained really steady. I think the other thing that's funny to me this week is that all of this about, you know, all this carnage in bonds, this is the first week ever where stocks have gone down, but bonds didn't go up at the same time. Bonds aren't working. That's nonsense. That's absolute nonsense. Bonds worked really well this week. If you owned relatively short-term treasury bonds or relatively short-term bonds, they didn't go down this week. They may have gone down 0.25%, and there's a lot of bonds that went up a little bit this week. So flat on one half of my portfolio, if I'm Pam and I choose half in stocks and the other half in bonds, if I have a week where stocks go down 3-5%, but my bonds stayed flat and steady, that's working. That's good. They don't always have to be perfectly countercyclical. We're going to go through periods of time where not working doesn't mean that they didn't go up by 5% to completely counteract the stock loss. Flat is okay. That's exactly why we own these things. I'd like them to go up. I'd like bonds to make money in a week when stocks don't. But for them to remain relatively steady, I'm okay with that. And it doesn't mean they're not working. We've got to go to the phones here. My goodness, we've got a lot of great calls. I wish we had more time this morning. Let's go to start with Leon in Loganville. Leon, what's going on? How can I help, my friend?
Good morning. How you doing today?
I'm good. Thanks for the call. How can I help?
My 401k is changing, I guess you'd say, companies. They're going from one 401k per company to another.
To another, yeah.
And they're wanting me to, if I stay in managed funds, that it's going to go into a target fund. But I'm not sure if I really want to go in a target fund because the funds I'm in now are doing really well. So I just didn't know the difference between the two.
Where, just give me a bigger picture perspective, Leon. How many years, how old are you?
I'm 52.
You have a long time before you're thinking about retirement. Could be 10, 15 years, correct?
Yeah, I guess you could say that. Yeah.
And this happens all the time, right? You have a 401k plan and you have no say so in this usually. And the company, your company changes out providers and says, okay, we're going to get rid of these people and you get a new 401k plan. And when that happens, you typically get what's called mapped to securities that are similar to what you had.
Right.
If you had 100% in equity funds, U.S. and international, you'll end up with new funds typically that are U.S. and international. Now, sometimes I've seen these plans where they're trying to get more people into these target date funds, just kind of almost from a liability perspective. They want you to have some balance, and they're going to automatically map you into a target fund. But, and that's not necessarily a bad thing, Leon. So yes, I actually like a lot of these target funds. The only problem I see with target date funds is that they can be very heavy in international. So if you have a target date fund that says Leon's not retiring until the year 2030, you know, 12 years from now, it might be 75% in stocks. And then of that, you could have 30% in international. That can be really, really tough. So if you look at it, a lot of these target date funds over the last few years, the reason they haven't done very well, and this is not all target date funds, are the ones that are really heavy in international markets. U.S. has done arguably very well. International markets have done terribly. And and when you're 20, 30, 40% in international, that can be a real killer in these target date funds. So just be careful. Make sure when you look at the target date fund, you'll get a breakdown. It'll say, I've got 45% in U.S. stocks and 20 in international and the rest in bonds. It's not all target date funds are created equal. You've got to understand what the makeup is. It's going to be an automatic allocation between U.S., large, mid, small, international, different kinds of bonds. And that's a good thing. That's automatically giving you some asset allocation. It automatically gets slightly more conservative over time. So it migrates to become more conservative so that when you're 65 and you retire, it's probably half in bonds and stable value, which again, that's a good progression. And that's why these companies want employees to be in these, because it kind of forces you to be diversified. It's a good thing, I think, over time for the majority of folks. So it's not bad. You're going to get mapped into a target date fund, which is okay. And as long as it's not overly heavy in international, I think I'm fine with that. Option B would be you go back in and relook at, of course, all your options and say, look, I don't necessarily want this target date fund. I want to choose 4 to 5 different funds. I build my own allocation for you, Leon. And that's what you stick with. So just because they're mapping you and putting you in a fund in the beginning doesn't mean that you don't reserve the right to change it on your own. Leon from Loganville, my friend, thank you for the call. 404-872-0750, the number in the studio. Where do we continue to go, Ryan? I'm just taking direction from Ryan. We're headed to Ken in Decatur. Hey, Ken. Welcome to Money Matters. What's going on? How can I help?
Good morning, Mr. Boss. In my retirement years, I've become something like yourself, your recommendation of an income investor, and I'm pretty much willing to look at all areas like MLPs and REITs and common stocks and all those good things. And one of those hunting grounds that I poke around in are closed-end mutual funds.
I like that, hunting ground for income. We're hunting for income. Ken Indicator is on a hunt and search for income. Cool, I like that.
Okay, and in those closed-end funds at the moment, I've been looking at floating-rate mutual funds. Now, I would have thought that in a rising interest rate environment, that would be amenable to those sort of funds. But when I look at them, I notice that many of them are closer to their 52-week low. But more disconcerting is that many of them, their distributions are dropping, which is the antithesis of what I would have anticipated. And I wondered if you had a thought on that.
Yeah, so if you look at some of these closed-end funds that are, so JFR is an example, Nuveen Floating Rate Income Fund, is, again, if you look with floating rate funds, you would suspect, hey, rates are going up. These floating rate funds float. You're not locked into a rate. Why isn't my floating rate fund doing well when rates are going higher? Well, there's a couple reasons for that. First of all, kind of the main reason, oh my goodness, we've got to run to break. So I almost got lost in this. I got emotionally connected to hunting for income with you. Okay. So just hang on. Well, let me. We're going to go quick. News, traffic, weather, or weather traffic. And then I'll be back with Ken. So hang on the line here, Ken. Ken from Decatur, about floating rate closed end funds. More Money Matters straight ahead. Good morning. Welcome back to Money Matters here. We'll go back to the phones here as we wrap up this Sunday morning. Ken, you still with us from Decatur?
I'm here.
Hey, man. Thanks for hanging on. The Ken's question, really, we'll get right back to this, is that, hey, we've got closed-end funds. They're floating rate closed-end funds. You would think they'd be fine during an environment where interest rates are going higher, and yet your closed-end funds are down. Here is a really important variable, and you probably know this, but for our listeners, I'll remind you that closed-end funds are actually really inefficient. It's one of the few areas in the market that I would say it's kind of the opposite of this of real efficiency. And because they have this, that new shares are not created or destroyed, it's just a fixed number of shares, you can get some huge mispricing, Ken, between what the bonds in there are really worth versus what it's trading for. And in an environment where everyone's just kind of selling everything in almost panic mode, like we saw this week, closed-end funds kind of get caught up in that tide, and they can get, I would say, mispriced really easily, and in this case, to the downside. And I think that's really kind of where we are in the closed-end fund world, is that they're inefficient and they're mispriced. When people get nervous, they kind of sell everything, and closed-end funds get hit, I would say, disproportionately bad. They also use leverage. Or not all of them. The one you're talking about, or the one that we, this example that we're using today, it uses a bunch of leverage. And when you're using leverage, you've got, this closed-end fund is borrowing money, right? So if you're borrowing money and you're using a leverage closed-end fund, when rates go up, the leverage gets more expensive. So think about, and there's a large universe of these closed-end funds. Think about some of the closed-end funds that are not leveraged. And I think that you've just got to be patient here as closed-end funds kind of go through this mispricing phase. Typically, once they get to be 10 and 15% discounts to what they're really worth, that's when you want to own these closed-end funds, because they typically revert back towards the mean and they get closer back to their net asset value. The price kind of migrates higher. We've done a lot of studies on closed-end funds over the years. And the number one variable to have good performance over time is to buy closed-end funds at a discount relative to what they typically trade out, or what's called their historical discount. And if you do that systematically over time, closed-end funds can really be a great asset class. It's just a little more complicated. You know, not enough time here on Money Matters. We had so much to talk about. If you want to find me and Ryan throughout the week, we'd love to try to help you through anything. Same questions we had here today with Ken and Pam. We're here to help. We're in Atlanta. Whether you're outside of the state of Georgia or in Georgia, we're happy to help be an objective third-party voice to try to help you get to an early, happy retirement. It's what we want to try to help with. Thank you for tuning in. Stay tuned. And again, you can find us at wesmoss.com or yourwealth, yourwealth.com. Stay tuned to the best programming on the planet right here. News 95.5 at AM 750 WSB.
Home Improvement.